Hi, folks. Welcome into Flourish FM and the special series on anti-fragility. Really excited about the conversation we're bringing you today. I sat down and chatted with my good friend, Doneen Taylor, who's just an absolute rock star. Doneen is a WPRA world champion. In 2016, she won the world championships in tie-down calf roping. That's right. She's a true blue American cowgirl and an awesome one at that. But she's also a certified mental performance coach. She's a speaker. She's a two-time best-selling author. The book, Heart of a Champion, which is essentially a memoir and a story of her sort of, let's say, difficulties and challenges throughout childhood and adulthood and womanhood, and eventually, of course, the culmination in her world championship. And then Mastering the Art of Winning, which is really a guidebook, a how-to book for a lot of the things that she teaches and coaches her clients to do. Had an awesome conversation about anti-fragility. She's a living, breathing example of it. She's also a mother of two young men now. We talk about how anti-fragility played a role, not just in her life, but in her parenting and competing as well. Really awesome conversation filled with a lot of insight. And so here it is, Doneen Taylor. Hey there, Coach. Hey. How we doing?
How are you?
Great to see you.
Great to see you. Made my day knowing I was going to see you today.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Me too. This is going to be fun. Yeah. Looking forward to it. Okay, Doneen, I'm pumped to be doing this with you. I know you're excited as well. This is going to be fun. I want to start kind of right on the nose here. What we mean by and how you think about anti-fragility. And the reason I want to do that, we're going to get into, I think, some of your story and personal history and kind of why it resonates for you. But I just want to start with, I think, your excitement around this concept, because when I first started talking about it, and to be transparent for our listeners, you're a member of our advisory board, right? You're a supporter of the work we're doing. You're a big believer in this concept. So let's start with, what do you think it means and why does it have you so juiced?
Well, what it means for me is being able to bounce back up. Obstacles make me stronger. Struggles make me stronger. Challenges make me stronger. Failures make me stronger. That's what it means for me. It means taking those things, and I like to say I'm an alchemist, taking those things and then using them as fuel, using all of that stuff as fuel to move me forward, to help me grow, to help me get outside my comfort zone, to keep moving forward. And I know you're academia. That's not in the dictionary, you know, but I mean, that's what it means for me.
That is what it means. That's the essence. Yeah. Forget academia. Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, right?
But for me, it's more knowing what it looks like for me, like inside, when I'm present. Man, that sets me up to be anti-fragile. When I'm positive, when I'm productive, when I'm focused on process, persistent. I mean, when I see myself doing those things, being those things, I know I'm in that realm of working towards being anti-fragile.
It's interesting that you added that part on at the end, because I think sometimes people hear the word anti-fragile and you think about the half a dozen ways you described it right on the onset, which I think are perfect. Those sound like, or close to, tough it out, suck it up, be non-fragile, right? And I want to push back against this, because I know that's not what you mean. I know that's not what we mean either, and that there's actually some room in between. And I think your answer speaks to it, because right away you talked about, I know how I'm feeling internally. I know how I'm thinking internally, mindset, optimism, positivity, those sorts of things. It doesn't sound like for you it means this grit and bear unpleasantness all the time sort of lifestyle or existence.
No, it's being vulnerable, transparent, courageous, brave, bold, living on the edge, you know, not knowing what's coming, really, like it could go either way, but you keep taking the next step forward. I mean, that's what anti-fragile is, what it looks like for me, feels like for me. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Where does your, and you can already feel this, so I was so excited to talk to you, can already feel your, I think, enthusiasm, just passion around this. Where do you think that comes from for this, you know, this sort of idea and concept and application?
Yeah, because I wasn't for so long. I wasn't for so long. I mean, you've read my book, Heart of a Champion, and my family wasn't that. I wasn't that. I mean, my family, a lot of blame, complain, being defensive, making excuses, when things got hard, you back down, you don't ask for help, very negative. I mean, just the opposite of what anti-fragile is for me. And I did it their way for a really long time. And what I found was I did a lot of start, stop, and start, stop. And I did a lot of riding the insanity loop, doing the same thing over and over and over again, thinking it's going to get better.
What were some of those loops that you eventually needed to break?
Oh, shucks. Okay. Well, when I didn't win, when I didn't get the results I wanted, when things got a little sideways, I mean, all of those things, I'm thinking the world's out to get me. Poor, pitiful me. Why me? I can't believe this stuff's happening again. I can't believe she's winning. I can't believe he's winning. They don't want it as bad as I want, but I want it. It would stall me out. I'd get stuck. I would stop. I would quit. And I thought that was okay. But I really had that all-consuming desire, burning desire in my heart, in my being. I mean, that, gosh, I really want to run down this goal. And it was that goal that really kept me hooked, kept me locked in. And, you know, I went to that bull riding school with my oldest son, Hunter. My kid's in high school. He wants to ride bulls. And I know Lyle Sankey. I know he's a great coach. I know it's going to be safe. I know, you know, as safe as bull riding can be.
Sure, but, yeah, you right. know,
but he's going to have the right equipment. He's going to have different level bulls. He's going to show him shoot procedure and all the things. He gets all those guys sitting in the bleachers, 8 o'clock in the morning, the first day. And I'm sitting on the side, Doc, and I got my notebook, my pen. I'm going to take notes because I know my kid, he ain't going to write nothing down. He ain't going to take notes. And so I'm writing every down verbatim. He's showing him how to tie a knot in the rope. He's showing him how to do things. I'm drawing it. I'm kid drawing it the best I can. And then he asked all the guys. They're all guys. Not that girls don't go to those, but they was all guys on that day.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, does anybody here know the definition of insanity? And none of the guys raised their hand. This is like 2011. You know, now pretty common. That's kind of a buzzword a lot now. But 2011, it wasn't, not in my circles. And those guys, none of those guys knew. And there's probably 30 guys there. And nobody answered. And I'm writing down definition of insanity. And then Lyle, Mr. Sankey, says the definition is doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results. And I'm writing it down. And I just have that huge light bulb, that aha moment. I mean, the dots connected. I'm like, that's me. That's me. And that was 5 years prior to me running down my goal of wanting to become a world champion. And that truly was a turning point for me. You know, when I had the awareness, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I need to do things. I want to do things differently. That was the catalyst for me to really spur me on because it looked so bad. And I mean, before that, I mean, Doc, eating disordered, OCD, went to rehab twice because I'm no quitter. And then coming back and still being scared to death what's on the other side of struggle and failure and challenge and adversity. Just being scared of what's on the other side of it, thinking I can't go there.
Tell me more about that, because you've listened for our listeners. We've known each other for, I think, a few years now. We've had, I think, similar conversations. I've read the book. I love the book. I think everybody should read it. I hope it turns into a big, awesome, badass movie. But tell me, like, when you say things like that, it puzzles me a little bit because, like, as an outsider, I sit there, I look at you, and I think, well, everything you just listed off, you conquered and you overcame. And we'll get into it a little bit more. I think it's probably laced with real trauma and some post-traumatic growth at the same time, right? And you're really good about pulling both those things out. But we'll get to that. I guess at the moment, why do you think you continued to maybe sort of look at that and fear or doubt or sort of what was on the other side?
Well, that's what was modeled for me. I grew up with that. It was modeled for me.
How so?
With my parents. I mean, take the safe road. Scared to do anything different, scared of what other people might think, really consumed with the results, consumed with what it looked like from the outside. You know, what will other people think? What will other people do? Be a good girl. Shame on you. Good girls don't do this. Don't embarrass me. I mean, you get told that type of thing, you're not really a big risk taker.
Rigid, pessimistic, fearful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Very, very fearful. Yeah. I mean, very stay within the family. I mean, when I learned to ask for help, that was huge. I mean, that was scary. Gosh, you mean I can ask for help? I can go work with someone. I don't need to grind it out on my own. Ask for help. Nobody's going to love you as much as your family. Nobody's going to help you except your family. I mean, it was an enmeshment.
You think that's a big part of anti-fragility, support structures, systems, communities?
Yeah. Yeah. I call it the elite inner circle, who you have in your circle, your community. And my inner circle's not very big. It's not very big, I get, you know, compared to what some folks may have. I mean, it's incredibly important to build that inner circle and to invest in yourself. I got a lot invested with a lot of different coaches. I mean, money, time, energy, effort. I mean, you were a big part. You are a big part in my inner circle. I mean, that's huge.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's interesting you bring that up, because when I asked it, you know, I was really, in some ways, I guess, thinking most immediately family, friends, those sorts of things. But you brought us to a really good place there as well, in terms of like your attitude. And so far, let's just highlight, we've heard some me skills like self-talk and the story you tell yourself and the perception and the mindset, right? But now you're also bringing up some we pieces. So relationships, certainly we can get into family or friends. But again, you brought us to, I think, a really nice place, which is you can also thoughtfully, strategically surround yourself with people who can, I think, accelerate your ability to live more in a more anti-fragile way.
Yeah, I started seeking out people who had what I wanted. Getting off the insanity loop. I mean, like, okay, how am I going to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Where did you start? That's the question, right? How do I do this? Cool. I want to change. Where do I begin? Where did you start?
Yeah. I started with a decision.
Yep.
I started with a decision. Hey, I want to get off the insanity loop. I mean, I'm going to commit to it. And so I wrote myself out a contract with myself. And it was a recommitment. Commit to your commitment. Keep committing to your commitment. I mean, it wasn't like I signed the contract and then put it in the folder. I mean, I was going to stay committed to this goal that I wanted to run down. And big part of that was to get off the insanity loop. So I was committed to it. And I made the decision that that's what I was going to do. It was a line in the sand.
Yeah.
Type of moment, like step across it. Hey, that's who I was, but this is who I am now. And no matter what, sacred, matter what, I ain't going back to the way I was doing things.
Yeah. And so who you want to be now or who you want to become, you look out, you start reading, learning, investigating, whatever, and you're starting to see people, coaches, experts, who, as you just put it, kind of have some of what you want, either to learn or live or apply or maybe all of that.
Yeah. I mean, and I start off going in the barn. I mean, you've been in my barn, like listening to YouTube things while I'm doing my horse things out there, listening to Les Brown, listening to real old school, like Earl Nightingale, listening to Napoleon Hill, listening, Brene Brown, listening to them, thinking like, man, I don't know. That's what I want. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but that's what I want. And I started hanging up, you've been in my barn, all those signs of success. I mean, it's like a tile, like a total immersion learning experience.
It really is. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
That was huge. And I was doing all this pretty instinctively, you know, just follow intuitively, like following my gut. Like I need positivity. I need to surround myself with this. I need to get addicted to it. And the signs of success, I really started to work on how I was going to really choose the words that I was going to speak, really be mindful of that, because words are so powerful. I really got turned on to that perspective, how I was going to frame things. I really got turned on about that. The world wasn't happening to me. I mean, I started like the world's happening for me. You know, it's not why me. It's like, why not me? You know, learning that Troy Pruitt's one of the coaches I've worked with for, gosh, I mean, coming on 30 years, I've known him and his family. And one day, it wasn't the best training session at his barn. And I'm sure he saw it in my face. And he's like, Donnie, there's winners and there's learners. And he's like, right here, we learned a lot today. And that blew me back, like, wow, winners and losers. That's what I would have said. And he's saying winners and learners. And it started to become so much more than the winning. But gosh, what are the steps I need to take? How can I learn? How can I bounce back? How can I rally back?
Feedback, growth, long-term process.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, going to his place, I was like, man, I don't know why he keeps letting me come back, because a fit thrower, I'd cuss. And he's just so laid back, looking for the positive. And I'm like, man, I don't understand what's in his water. Like, I don't know what he's drinking, because I don't see it like that. And then as I figured my things out, I'm like, well, hell, he's got a growth mindset. And that was so weird to
started
me.
Putting a language to it. Yeah. Started labeling it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He's growth mindset. I'm fixed. I'm like, if I can't do it today, I just can't do it. You know, this is it. It's all or nothing. He really grew me a lot.
So you started getting models on the other side too. Like you mentioned having things modeled for you at one point or throughout, you know, kind of multiple periods of your life. Eventually these other models start kind of taking their places within your life as well in different ways, shapes and forms. And that helps kind of nudge some of these changes as well. Like you can see it. Like you said earlier, I like the way you phrased it. I want that. I want what they have, right? And then you start adding language and learning to it as well. It sounds like underscoring it with what you're watching, reading, listening to.
Yeah, it was a build. It wasn't like waking up one day and I'm anti-fragile. You know, it wasn't that at all. And I really don't think I was fragile. I think I was more resilient, you know, more resilient. Mm-hmm. Like I could get beat up and knocked down and I would keep bouncing, but eventually, man, I lay out for the count, just lay out for the count. And then I would come back eventually.
That alone is wildly admirable. When you consider, but you consider anything difficult in life, but certainly, and you gave us sort of the short list, if you will, earlier of some really intense, traumatic, difficult things that you've gone through. Anyone who can come through that at all, let alone bounce back to sort of baseline, if you will, is, I think, an unbelievable story. I think all you're doing is saying where the real change and switch happened that kind of helped maybe navigate or prevent or stop you from kind of going back into some of those spaces is where maybe you would distinguish resilience from anti-fragility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say. Yeah. I mean,
correct me. You're thinking something else.
No. I appreciate you telling me I done good, you know, getting baseline. And the thing is, that didn't happen all by itself either. I mean, sure. I mean, after my first child was born, I mean, he's like 3 months old. And I realized, man, I am deep into this eating disorder and OCD. And so was my mom. And I'm like, man, I'm going to do better. I mean, I'm just going to do better. And I mean, Hunter, he sparked me to go get some help. And I remember leaving Julie's office. I write about her in the book. I remember leaving her office the first time and I was mad. I was so mad at her. All the things she said, you know, that my family was, that's not healthy. That's not normal. That's all I had ever known. Here, I'm thinking it's all me. Like, I just need to figure my stuff out.
Yeah.
And she was helping me unpack it, but I kept going back. And heck, I saw her last Wednesday. You know, I have things going on. I mean, I still go and sit down on her couch and we unpack it and work it out. I kept going back. I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, most people would have got mad and not went back, Doc. I kept going back for 30 years.
Why do you think you kept going back? I mean, you know, you mentioned Hunter as a spark and maybe that's it. Maybe it was just, hey, I'm a mom. I want to work on these things. I want to do it for my kid. And that did it. my guess is there's probably more to it, but you know, what kept you going? Because what's interesting, I think, Dunning, is like, so you mentioned, yes, you listened to the talk, you took the notes, you want to get off the insanity train. And that was like a line of demarcation. But it also sounds like the one you're describing right now with Hunter was sort of a line of demarcation as well, and meeting Julie and going down that path. And I guess I'm wondering what led to that.
Well, I didn't want to be my mom. I mean, I didn't. I wanted to break the cycle. I did. I mean, I didn't want to be my mom. I just didn't want to be my mom. I wanted to do better.
Hmm.
I did. I wanted to do better.
And that fueled the resilience, you think? The persistence?
Keep going. Yeah.
The grit.
Keep showing up. Keep doing the work. Going to rehab twice. The goal. Going to rehab, I think. Wanting to win the world. I mean, that fueled me to get my things figured out, you know, in rehab. I mean, I wanted more. And to have more, you must become more. And a lot of this, Doc, I mean, it was intuitive or instinctive. I mean, I'm just shooting from the hip. I'm just doing stuff. I'm not sitting idle. I love my husband. I mean, Dan, I had a lot to live for. But it was to the point where I wasn't 80 pounds, less than 80 pounds. I mean, I wasn't going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a choice. It was a decision.
I think I want to try to unpack
that
decision a bit more. And granted, and you might sit and say, hey, Doc, there's not much more to unpack. I told you, right? Stan, Hunter, there's love. There's, I don't know what emotion you might put on it. There's the goal, right? There's some, that's okay. Some ego, a little pride in there, right? Little esteem. Yep. It sounds healthily.
Yeah. At that point it was ego. Yeah.
I'm curious what the comment about your mom, is that fear? Is that disdain? Is that anger?
All the above.
All of it.
It was complicated. My mom.
Yeah.
Mom-daughter relationship, very complicated. Daughter-dad, complicated. It all was very complicated. I mean, it just was very complicated. And, you know, the last 6 weeks of her life was the best 6 weeks we ever had.
Why is that?
Well, we took off our masks.
Mm.
I mean, mm-hmm. She shared different things. I just let her share what she wanted to share. I didn't dig. I didn't pry. You know, I mean, at one point she says, man, if I could do it all over again, I would do it so much differently. And I'm sitting there next to her bed. I'm thinking, man, you know, she's got regret. She's got regret. And I certainly wouldn't want to have that be one of the last conversations I had with my kids. I mean,
mm-hmm.
They have regret, you know, and she's having regret. She knows she's going to die. But yeah, I mean, it was very complicated. And I knew that, you know, as I'm learning that it's not healthy, as I'm understanding it, as I'm getting it unpacked and I'm doing the unpacking, I'm doing the work, counseling's work, rehab's work. I'm figuring it out. Wow. Like, this is important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in it to win it. Like, this is important stuff. But I just, the very first, you know, one or two, I'm like, I was even like, are we going to code it? There's so much shame in what I had going on, Doc. I mean, I'm like, are we coding it that? Can you code it something different? Can you, like the ICD-9 codes, can you code it something different? Or do you have to code it eating disorder? Like, I need to code it what it is. I'm like, okay. So much shame. Mm.
What I'm curious about, I appreciate you going there with us. You know, obviously you've written about it extensively and you've talked about it, but I'm sure it's never easy to go back to those places. And, you know, as we talk about anti-fragility, you started with that awesome story that I think was like inspirational, right? Oh, I can learn about growth mindset and I can change myself, but I can build the good, right? But it also seems like, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like there were a lot of lessons learned or behaviors learned or emotions leveraged that came from, for lack of a better word, the bad. And I guess I'm just wondering how you do you reflect on that? Do you think about that? Because a lot of what you described is obviously truly awful in so many ways. And it seems like you're pulling out really important lessons or motivating emotions from those experiences at the same time.
Yeah, it was really helpful for me. I mean, this is part of the build for the anti-fragility for me is to gain that emotional regulation. Get off the emotional roller coaster or the emotional results roller coaster. And that was huge for me to learn how to regulate. My mom rode that emotional roller coaster and I rode it right along with her. And you don't need to ride that ride. You don't need to go to that ticket booth and buy that ticket or buy that all you can ride wristband. I mean, you can cut that off. You don't need to ride it. It's a choice. I really started taking the emotion out of it, being like mad and furious and angry about it, depressed or disappointed, taking the disappointment out of not getting what I wanted and just really putting on the lab coat and like getting curious and interested. Ooh, that's interesting. Get sparked. That's I'm going to get motivated. I'm going to work on that. And that was a big part of how to not ride that ride, you know, spiky like that. To really gather, be like a data collecting fool,
yeah.
Just an expert data collector. And that was a shift in perspective.
Hi friends, Nick here with just a brief interlude to share with you an update on one of our newest partnerships with the Anti-Fragile Academy. Throughout John and I's conversations with many, if not most of our guests, one thing has been made really clear. In order for people to flourish, thrive, experience the good life, they need to develop the capacity to not only navigate and endure, but ideally grow from the bad, grow from unpleasant experiences. That's why we're thrilled to be partnering with our newest sponsor, the Anti-Fragile Academy, an organization that I co-founded with Dr. Adam Wright, Director of Mental Performance for the Washington Nationals. At the Anti-Fragile Academy, we work with adolescent athletes, executives, and educators to help them understand some of the science, not just of optimal performance, but of well-being and anti-fragility. The ability not only to endure and bounce back from unpleasantness, but to actually come back stronger, to grow from it. Between Adam and I, we've worked with Fortune 100 companies, Inc. 300 executives, Division I programs, and elite professional athletes and Olympians from all over the world. To find out more about how you can leverage anti-fragility training, check out our website at theantifragileacademy.com. Mark Brackett at the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence talks about that as being emotion scientists.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, it's very similar, I think, what you're saying. It's not judgmental, it's investigative.
Very, like get the flashlight out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get the flashlight out. You said it earlier. It starts with awareness, right? Putting the spotlight on it, putting the flashlight on it. Understanding why you're feeling whatever you're feeling, putting some sort of label on it so you know what you're dealing with, and then figuring out how you want to respond, right? Or react in some way, shape, or form. And if you can do that enough and get some control, you can have some level of regulation. I don't know that we ever get to full emotional regulation, but you were going to say.
Well, yeah, but I think you can master it. I really do. I think you can master it. I mean, knowing that I control these buttons. They're going to get hit, but I control them. I control what I do. It is responsive for me. It's not reactive for me. And I mean, it's having the ball, being on the offense. I got the ball. I'm in control.
Being on the offense. Yeah.
Yeah. Offensive solutions, hitting my pause button, breathing, being composed, zooming out, getting a new perspective. I mean, knowing, hey, like I'm getting ready to buy that ticket. Like, hey, hit the pause. Take a breath.
So that's the piece right there, right? What you're describing requires some sort of space or pause between stimulus and response, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the E plus R equals O.
Right. How do you get that pause? How do you get that space between your stimulus and response? Because everything you're saying makes sense. It jives. There's lots of good science behind it. And doesn't matter if you can't get that gap. to do some of that thinking and reflecting and non-judgmental awareness, right? So how do you create that gap for yourself?
Well, practice and mindfulness.
Practice and mindfulness, you
know? Yeah. Being practice, having a gratitude practice, having a breathing practice, having a meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for the opportunities. Where can I push that pause button? How can I get really good at it? It takes reps to push the pause button and take a breath and zoom out and see it for what it really is. Stop taking it personally. Controlling the controllables. I mean, all of that is big for mindfulness for me.
So you might seek out having those buttons pressed.
Yeah, just like seeking out getting outside your comfort zone.
Right.
Seek out doing stuff that scares the dickens out of you. Seek out those things, like try it on, get some reps in. I mean, that's what I did when I was figuring my things out. Is like, okay, I'm an athlete. Let's get some reps in.
Yeah.
Let's get some reps in. And then celebrate everything. Celebrate the awareness. Good job. Good job recognizing you were about ready to buy that ticket. Good job. Even if I didn't like crush it, good job working the rep.
Yeah.
Being my own best coach. I got great coaches. I ain't scared to invest in myself. But when I determined and made the decision, it's all decision for me. I'm going to be my own best coach. I really started to catch some momentum.
Yeah.
And it just got catapulted. And it was like, I'm just kind of inching along. And then I just caught momentum. And it was like, man, I can't believe I did it any other way.
Yeah.
I can't believe I got on that emotional roller coaster. I can't believe that I ever stopped, quit. I can't believe I did that.
Totally different perspective.
But I was doing my best.
You don't know what you don't know, right? Like, you've got to have these moments of awareness that you've talked about in order for transformation to occur. If you don't know what you even want to transform into, it makes transformation much harder, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I worked it up from rock bottom. I believe. I mean, I did. I mean, you get to rehab twice. I mean, you're kind of rock bottom. I really did want to get better.
Yeah.
I really did. I really enjoy it. I mean, I enjoyed it. I really did. And I think that was part of the putting on the lab coat and taking, instead of attaching my self-worth to it, going back to the earlier conversation, well, what did it look like growing up? And man, I had my self-worth, love. I mean, maybe my folks would say something different, but perception, my perception is my reality. I felt like when I won, I was loved more. I felt when I won, I was a winner. And the opposite was true when I didn't win. I felt like, gosh, now I'm going to have to earn their love back. Gosh, I'm not worthy. I mean, my self-worth was really wrapped up into all of it. And then when I put on the lab coat, and like you called the scientist lab coat, I mean, my self-worth isn't attached to any of that. I'm learning something. I'm having fun. I'm having joy. I'm going to get better. My self-worth isn't attached to any of this. It's what I do. It's my results. Sure, in the heck aren't who I am. You know, it's just, I enjoy doing this.
Yeah.
That allows you to be anti-fragile. Part of the reason, you know, when you can take your self-worth, stop attaching your self-worth.
Yeah. Intrinsic, not extrinsic.
Oh, totally extrinsic growing up. Yeah.
So how did this, I mean, you've kind of laid out so many different, I think, markers throughout childhood and even early kind of competition experience that can create all sorts of different challenges. You've also laid out a lot of these kind of interesting moments of reflection and transformation. And you said pretty explicitly a big motivation that led to one of the biggest transformations was just didn't want to be mom, right? Wanted to do things differently. And so what I'm curious about is like that kind of makes me jump to a pondering, right, around something that I see very often in my world working with parents, coaches, young people, whatever it might be. Most people seem to understand that doing hard shit, right, and seeking discomfort and growing through adversity is a part of life and is really good for their kids to experience. And then they often don't let it happen, right? And it's not because they're bad parents, because they love their kids and they want to do everything possible for them and make them happy and experience joy and comfort and all those sorts of things. But I'm taking too long of a time to frame this question, but I think you can see where I'm going with this, which is like, I look at you and I imagine you parented with both of those lenses in mind, right? Like, how do I help my kids do hard stuff, take it on? I'm sure Stan was a part of this as well, obviously, but also be different and help them have a different existence that's filled with, I'm going to say more, let's say more pleasantness.
Yeah. Helicopter parents, snowplow parents,
sure.
You know, is that what we're talking about? Kind of.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just really honest with myself. I know I was a better parent towards, like, when my kids got older, in school still, but I believe I was a better parent because I was healthier. I was healthier. And as I became healthier, absolutely, letting them...
Put your oxygen mask on first, always, right?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's good, Doc. Yeah. Yeah, I was working on not dying. You know what I mean? I'm working on surviving. And it was really hard. Parenting was, it's harder when you're not healthy. It's harder when you're not healthy. But I was there and Stan was there and we did all the things and we loved them all. We loved them, but it was hard. And once I got healthy, then I could see some and take some action, do the things that would help them spread their wings. I don't believe I'm not saying we didn't ever, because that's not true, but we really worked not to be the snowplow or the helicopter parents.
How would you go about that?
How would I go about not doing that?
Yeah, exactly. So in other words, there's probably moments where you and Stan were like, yeah, this is going to be unpleasant, uncomfortable, difficult, whatever it might be. But for lack of a better phrase, maybe you let them tread water a little bit and see if they can swim to shore.
Yeah. If they got in trouble, okay, we didn't rush to the rescue. We didn't jump, like, we know who our kids are. Okay. We didn't jump to the rescue and say, our kid would never do that or try to finagle things. Like, we let it.
Accountability.
We let it play out. Yeah. Accountability. Yeah. Yep. I like that. We didn't rush to the rescue when things, we didn't go and try to get them into certain things. They needed to earn that and work towards it. They needed to do the work. Roper, my youngest, he's in the Weebelows, Boy Scouts. Okay. You know, I'll talk about Weebelows. And what do they sell? They sell popcorn. They sell popcorn. You know, I mean, a lot of parents, I mean, take those things, throw it out on the table. Sign up if you want popcorn, sign up. Or now, back in the day, Doc, we didn't have the Facebook.
Sure. The actual catalog. Yep, sure.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, I picked Roper up every day after school. He was a willing and eager. Okay. Had his Weebelow shirt and he put that Weebelow shirt on. I had drink, a little snack there in the back of the truck, and we drove and he walked up to every, I'm there because Weebelow, you're like 10 or 11. You're not, I mean, you're still in elementary school. And he walked up to every house and he was the high salesman for the district. Okay. So we're talking like $9,000 worth of popcorn, that kiddo, in a course of like 6 weeks. Okay. And he did it. And that filled, I'll tell you what, that filled his confidence fuel tank. He did that. He did that.
And it was hard. And it required some discipline and self-regulation and discomfort. And those are the sort of lessons you and Stan are trying to drive home.
Yeah. And I mean, I was out of rehab at that time. You know, I was healthier. You know, I was healthier. But he stuck with it. He stuck with it. And same way with Hunter, with the bull riding. Like, I can't ride that bull for him. That's his deal. We set them up for the opportunities.
That's the piece, is the support piece, right? Because, and I think you and I have chatted about this before, we've used this language in episodes, but when you talk about anti-fragility on like a systemic or like ecosystemic environmental level, you get into basically like ratios of challenge and support. And so really high challenge, really low support, that's unrelenting, right? It's oppressive. High challenge with high support, that's facilitative. And on a systemic level, that's anti-fragile, right? Like, push It's hard. You got to kind of rise. You got to, I like what you said earlier, to be different. You got to grow into something different, right? Those sorts of things. I'm curious about the support side, because it's not just throwing them into the water and saying, hey, I hope you can tread, right? Or I hope I can swim. It sounds like there's some support structures along the way. I think it goes back to your comment about doing things different. How did you and Stan, or how do you currently kind of navigate, let's say, more positive side of things, if you will?
Yeah, and my boys now, they're not boys. I mean, they're 27 and 30. And I mean, we're there for them. We love them. But I got to trust that what they have is what they need. And if they need something, they know they can ask. And there's no judgment. I probably share all my flubs. I do share all my flub ups with them. I mean, current flub ups with them. I mean, I keep it really real with them. Like, y'all can't do anything I haven't already done. I'm cheering for them.
Some of it's modeling in ways that maybe weren't modeled for you.
Oh, yeah. I model what a great coach looks like, right? How someone who coaches themselves, they don't see me quit. They see me rally. They see me getting outside my comfort zone. They see me do things that I have no idea how to do it, but I go ask for help. I mean, I'm really transparent with them of what I'm doing. Roper's a real creative side, and I'm sharing with him things that I put out into the world. And like, man, I don't know if folks will like it, but I like it, and that's what counts. I'm real transparent and share with them. And
you nudge skills and habits, some of those other things you do. You mentioned mindfulness, gratitude, the messages and sort of self-talk you surround yourself with, or, you know, the story you tell yourself. Have you been intentional about trying to share some of those things with them?
Yeah, I mean, and I share it by telling them what I'm doing. I don't tell them, hey, show me that gratitude journal.
Right.
I'm like, here's what I'm doing. Here's where I'm going. This is what I'm working on. You know, this is the meditation app I use. I'm not real hands-on, like telling them what to do, but I'm showing them.
Yeah. There's autonomy there. Yeah.
I'm more of a modeler than a telling them what to do, because I do a lot of coaching, and a lot of coaching of younger athletes. And a lot of the parents are like, hey, I tell them this and I show them this and it ain't working. And then I can show them and I can tell them and I can get in, I can talk to them, and they're doing it. And my boys are like that too. But I know I'm a good model for them, but I don't tell them what to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does make me think, you once told me about, and I've mentioned this in multiple other settings before, but you told me about a set of clients that you worked with. And I believe the young lady went on and I believe won nationals. But in this, the reason I bring up this particular pair is this was a daughter and father.
Yeah.
And they really worked with you and trained with you together. And I wanted to just bring us back to it, because we're kind of talking about parenting here a little bit. And I wondered if you would just sort of recap their experience with each other and through you, and kind of if you gleaned anything from witnessing that, that might help a parent listening kind of navigate these sort of things. Listen, if somebody's listening to this show at this point, it's because they're interested in science and flourishing and well-being and resilience and performance and those sorts of things. And so they're probably thinking about, like, how do I do this more organically with my kids? What'd you learn from that experience, and tell the audience a little bit about it? Because I think it's a really cool story.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you remembering that. Super cool family. Cool family. The dad reached out. He and his daughter, he had a daughter that great athlete. He wanted to work with me, and he wanted me to work with a daughter. And I'm like, well, we can do it together. I'm like, parents are free. When you work with me and you bring your kiddo or your kids, I mean, you want to sit on the calls. I mean, parents are free, because teamwork makes the dream work. And he's like, nope, I want my own session. He's like, you know, I compete and I want my own session. I'm like, okay, so you want me to meet with you, and then you want me to meet with your daughter? And he's like, yep. And I'm like, feel you like both? And he's like, yep, I want both. I'm like, okay. And so it was amazing. And we worked through the dad stuff competing, and pretty much did the same you know, not exactly, it's all customized, but we hit on the same things like confidence, you know, how to do confidence and focus and how to zoom out and get a different perspective and how to set up routines and set up your daily success checklist and visualization and imagery and self-talk and control the controllables and getting off the emotional roller coaster. I mean, the whole nine yards. And I'm doing that with dad and daughter. And they're supporting each other. Like, and then they're chit-chatting with each other. Yeah, when they go to the arena to practice, to train, then they're like, hey, we're going to work on one goal. Hey, we're going to lock in and focus. We're going to keep the culture out here. We're going to keep it positive and productive. And hey, we're not going to focus on the, we're going to reset our scoreboard 0-0. We're not packing our results with this, you know, and helping each other, coaching each other up, being their own best coach and then helping each other. And then his daughter goes on and just wins a couple national titles, a reserve championship title. And the dad at this point, I mean, they had worked with me, that they had great tools. And at this point, I mean, the dad is helping her and keeping her locked in and focused and saying the right things, the correct things, not derailing her. Well, don't screw this up or just catch or don't knock this over. You know, I mean, he has it together up here for himself and he's helping her to just excel and be her optimal best. And it was awesome. And I really attribute that to that dad. I mean, I get to see him from time to time. They're a great family and he really helped her. And the thing is too, she, during nationals coach, she was rehabilitating from a back injury. I mean, she was braced up. I mean, she's doing these things and she's not 100%, but she's given 100% of what she's got. And she's got her dad helping her stay on track. And it was just so cool to see it. And what she did that year, I'm not saying that no one else has ever done it, but it was phenomenal, her performance.
Yeah, it's a really great anecdote. It's a great story. I appreciate you rehashing it and sharing it with us. And it's funny, we were talking about it just earlier today. I was in a meeting with a therapist, just chatting about, not my therapist, a therapist, chatting about kind of youth sports culture, which of course I've existed in for a long time, you have as well, and how toxic that can get pretty quickly. And it's probably fair to say I've contributed to that in the past also. And a lot of it, a lot of the time, comes down to different messages, right? So a coach could give a message that's very different than a parent's message, that's very different than an athlete's internal message. Right. And I think what your story describes is kind of getting a lot of those in sync, not in a way that's like dogmatic, but in a way that creates like a real virtuous cycle and helps kind of all parties continue to kind of grow and create the win-wins that ideally they're all there for in the first place. But unfortunately, often that is not how it plays out. It plays out very differently. So it's a good example, I think, to start to wrap on.
Yeah. I mean, that family has a great culture, environment, values, behaviors, you know, how they talk to each other, really solid and productive, the whole culture of that family.
It's huge.
Yeah, and
it's cool.
And what's a win? You know, effort's a win, getting better's a win, rallying back's a win, growing through a mistake's a win. What do you value?
Celebrate the right things.
And focus on the intrinsic.
Yeah,
you got it.
That's great. It's great. It's awesome. Well, listen, I want to start to kind of wrap here. I do have one more question for you. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about both of your books and where people can kind of find you, connect with you, interact with you more.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks, coach. Yeah. Okay. Well, my website is dawningtaylor.com. And you can find all things right there, social media, all the things right there. My two books, Heart of a Champion and Master the Art of Winning, they're both on Amazon. And Heart of a Champion is my story of from a little girl to winning the world. And then Master the Art of Winning is a compilation of, we talked today, like the drills that I did. How did I do that? And I share with the drills and the performance journaling in Master the Art of Winning. So they go together. You don't need them both. Yeah. But the storybook is Heart of a Champion.
Yeah. Heart of a Champion is a great read. Recommend it to everybody. I really enjoyed it. Master of the Art of Winning, awesome resource as well. Like you said, both very different, but both, I think, really useful and powerful in their own ways. So we'll put them in the show notes so everybody can check them out.
Thanks.
Dunning, really appreciate you putting in the time today. I know you're busy and we really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun and you lent, I think, lots and lots and lots of valuable insights. So I'm sure our audience is appreciative as well.
Wow. Well, I always love seeing you, Doc. You've made my life just so much better and richer and fuller and fun, just all the things. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you back. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks so much for listening to Flourish FM. We hope you enjoyed the content. Please be sure to leave us a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast and on all major social media platforms.
And if you visit our website, flourishfmpodcast.com, you can sign up to our newsletter. We send out a weekly newsletter. First newsletter of every month, we share a long form blog. And every newsletter, every week, we share highlights from our previous episodes. Please hit subscribe on our website.